Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right. Another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how are things going in your world?
I am doing well. 2 days away from Holly coming back to town, fresh from the North Slope in Alaska. So I'm very excited about
that. That's right. Did you bring any souvenirs?
I don't know. We'll see. Apparently, there is like this warmest fur on the planet on the underside of a musk ox.
Yeah.
And she is making some sort of sweater, scarf, hat.
A knitter?
Yes, she is. She always has to be doing something. Being a big-time IBM consultant flying all over the world doesn't seem to be enough for her.
Right. She's got to start knitting things for you.
No downtime for Holly.
Well, we got a great show.
Yes, we do. We got a lot of good folks we're going to visit with a little bit later in the program. We are going to hear from President and Director of Design with AHT Interiors, Allison Havel-Todd. And we're also going to hear from a guy with Legal Shield, Keith Ivey, who we met yesterday briefly.
Yes.
When he showed up for the show yesterday. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from ConsultCap, Inc., Miss Catherine Ann Push. Did I say that last name properly?
Yes, you did.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. So this is a consulting and intermediary service, and I don't think Lee knows what that is. How about enlightening him?
What is that?
What's an intermediary service?
Okay, an intermediary is someone who acts between two other parties. So what we do is we help people to get into and out of business. And we find that in most cases, it's good to have an expert around when you're doing a project like that. And we're the expert that gets in between the buyer and the seller.
So you work with both people?
Not typically at the same time. We represent one party or the other.
But you can do both sides of the equation.
We can do both sides as long as we're representing one side or the other, because you want to have someone's best interest at heart when you're negotiating.
Right. You can't have both of their best interests.
It's very hard to do. Some people think you can, but you really can't.
Lee, you've helped people go out of business before,
haven't
you?
Yes, lots of times.
I'm
an intermediary, I guess.
So why do people buy businesses, in your experience, as opposed to just going down the tried and true path of showing up, doing your work, getting your check, and going along your merry way?
That is a very good question. And we find there's sort of an entrepreneurial personality and mindset, and everyone is not cut out to own a business. But people typically buy a business because they've decided they're tired of working for the man. They're tired of making money for someone else. They want to control their own destiny. We see a lot more in the last 4 or 5 years of people trying to help their children to get something productive to do besides laying on their couch.
Oh, so they're going to buy them a job?
Buy them a job.
Now, when you say buy a business or sell a business, are you talking about independent business or a franchise or both?
Mm-hmm. It can be either, as long as it's a going concern. A going concern is a business that has revenue, hopefully profits.
But that's not necessary?
It's not necessary.
Really?
You know, sometimes people will buy a business, especially another business may buy a business that is not profitable, because they can make it profitable by reducing a lot of the infrastructure, maybe duplicative positions. But if you guys got tired of doing what you're doing and wanted to own a business, you most likely want it to be profitable, have customers, employees, some kind of infrastructure that you could step into and immediately be profitable.
So it sounds like it can be a little bit risky, though. Is part of your value to these folks helping them identify and mitigate the risk?
Exactly. We feel like that's one of our biggest roles when we're representing buyers, because oftentimes people do not know what kind of business they should be purchasing. I would say a large percent of people out there listening to us probably thought at some time they wanted to own a restaurant.
Really?
That's a
popular thing.
And
would scare me half to death.
Yeah, Allison fell out of her chair when you said
and
that.
And you are absolutely right to be afraid, because there's a very, very high risk of failure in the restaurant world. So that's something that we try to do, is help people identify where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are, what kinds of industries might fit in better with their needs, their experience.
So that's kind of a trap then. Like if you always wanted to own an ice cream shop as a kid, or you love ice cream, and you go, well, you know, now I got some free time. I used to be, you know, an executive at a big company, and now's my chance to own that ice cream shop.
Exactly. And that's what sometimes happens. People go to some sort of a franchise trade show, maybe, and they sort of drink the Kool-Aid. And they think, oh, wow, you know.
It seems easy. How hard is it?
How hard can it be to own an ice cream store? Right. But there's a lot of things that they have not thought about, and that's where an expert comes in to try to help them.
So how would you kind of coach that person who at first they come in and they think they've got it figured out because they've, you know, they've been spending decades dreaming about this shop or whatever, this quaint little B&B, you know, that they've always imagined. And then they meet with you and then you're like, yeah, maybe not. That's a great idea. No.
Well, I try to temper the no, you
the
know,
dream
with
killer.
With the yes, you know. But I think in the end, they're grateful that I've helped them to understand where they would be successful versus where they might have a dream. Maybe it shouldn't be the ice cream store. Maybe it should be something else that is more needed that fits their skills better. But if they're dead serious on an ice cream store, then I would want them to look at what model is actually successful and profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And that might not be to start up their own. That might be, in this case, to go a franchise way.
Now, how do you kind of assess their skills? Like, they might think they're good at certain things. Is there... Like, do you just do that at a glance? You can tell, like, how?
Well, not necessarily at a glance. You know, sometimes people think that you can determine what their business is worth by kind of looking at their nose and telling them
really?
You just walked in the door and they want to know what it's worth. Well, the same thing is true with a buyer. And for that reason, many people that do what I do don't like to work with buyers because sometimes they don't know exactly what they want, and you have to do a lot of work to help to understand that person, maybe look at their background, their resume, and what they like to do, not at work, but at home.
Right.
You know, you might not realize that this accountant actually is a really hands-on person because he builds boats.
Right.
Well, there might be a business there that would allow him to do both of those things. So then we start looking at sort of the universe of businesses that are out there for sale and try to find one that somehow grabs him internally and goes, wow, you know, that's something I could do. And then we work the numbers and see if it makes sense from an economic standpoint.
But you're trying to get the feel for them just through kind of interviewing them. Do you give them a test or something? You know how they have all those tests that tell you, like, yeah, you should be a pilot. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't do any of that?
Yeah, sometimes we go that far, but typically not. If they have had those kinds of tests, we'll look at those results. But I guess I have a talent for that. I can quickly determine by talking with someone and looking at what they've done, sort of what quadrant they fit in on the Myers-Briggs, you know. And then I can help them to understand. Plus, if you look at the owner of the business, of a current business, if he's a big jovial salesperson who never met, you know, someone who's not a friend, then you don't want to put an introvert in there.
Right.
It's just not going to work. So sometimes it's just about the matching of what's already successful with the person who thinks they want to go in there.
So how do you know when it's time to get out? What are the signs that say, you know what, maybe we ought to think about selling this thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, we wish that people would think about that a whole lot earlier, because if you own a business, someday you're going to have to do something.
Right.
You know, but we think that if people have any kind of exit plan at all, they should be talking to us maybe 5 years before they really want to do it. We're lucky if we get people a year before. And so what are the reasons why we typically see them and they think they need to get out? That's because they've sort of maxed out on their money, their skills, their ability to grow the business any further. Many times an entrepreneur will start a business because they know how to do what that business does.
Right.
So you know how to bake, so you start a bakery.
Right.
And it's fun until it really becomes a business.
Now it's a job.
And now
I'm no longer a baker. I'm a person who manages other bakers, which isn't what I signed up for.
Exactly. You don't like to manage other people.
Exactly. I want to be a baker.
You don't like paperwork. You don't like taxes. Right. You don't like employees. You know, you don't like all that stuff. So then it's time to go to someone who maybe was an executive at a bakery. And now wants to own his own business.
Right,
because
that person couldn't
have
started it from scratch, but he can manage it.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's how that sort of life cycle of business goes. Of course, sometimes people need to get out for health reasons or divorce
or there's some
partnership
kind of
breakups.
Like some catastrophe of some kind or a life-changing event happens.
Exactly. Or we just find people get burnt out in general. 5 to 7 years as a business owner is a long time. It really is. And people go, oh, my goodness, I just need the next adventure. Where's the next thing?
Right.
I need the next thing.
Now, do you find that a lot of business owners want and expect a lot more for their business than it's really worth? And if so, how do you deal with that?
That's a very good question, and it's you're entirely right. There's recent studies that show that 60% of business owners are off by at least 35%. As to what their business is worth.
They think it's worth 35% more.
More
I suspect,
than
right?
what it is. And that's because there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and personnel, you know, investment in that business. But a business, when someone else buys it, they're buying an investment. An investment vehicle has got to return some kind of return on investment that makes sense.
Right.
So it is difficult, but there we can quantify. It's easy to quantify what a business is worth. It has a fair market value. And so that's a problem we can solve. Now, whether they want to hear it or not is often another thing. And that sometimes takes a long time for them to come around to that.
But how do you coach them through that when they see, like, in the newspaper, like, you know, $1 billion for some startup that's, you know, written on a napkin and, you know, a business been in business for 3 months and they get $100 million and you're telling that hardware store guy that he's worked 25 years that his business is worth, you know, $800,000 or something.
Right. It's supply and demand. It's basic supply and demand. So if there's a demand for that Facebook stock at that price, well, then that guy's going to get it. But if there's not a demand for a hardware store at something that you cannot pay for or get a loan on, then you can want it all you want, but it's not going to sell for that.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm shopping for a business broker or an intermediary and I'm seriously considering selling, what kind of questions should I be asking a potential advisor like this? So, I mean, I don't even know what questions to ask to know. All I would know is go to the Yellow Pages or something, right?
Yeah. I think like in most services, we look for someone who has expertise and knowledge. At least that's what I look for. A lot of our business comes from referral. When someone is looking for a financial planner, they typically don't go to the Yellow Pages. They normally ask someone they respect, maybe another professional, an attorney, an accountant, or someone else.
Ideally, somebody who's rich.
Ideally, right. Somebody who has apparently has a good financial right. planner, right? right. So lots of times people ask the person who's in the business now, the buyer, well, how'd you get into this business? You know, and they'll say, oh, you need to see Catherine. You know, she's been in this business a long time. She really cares and listens to you and makes an attempt to do what's right by you instead of just make a commission. So we get a lot of our business in that way.
So from existing businesses who have used your services before, or what about like accountants or financial planners? Is that other referral sources for you?
Yes, those are strategic partners of ours because if anybody's going to sell a business, they need both of those things.
Right.
Attorneys, accountants, financial planners are people that we work with on a daily basis.
What about bankers? Because in this financing world that we're in today, it's a lot different than there was 5 years ago.
Absolutely. There's probably a whole different set of lenders than we had 5 years ago. Or at least the lenders have all shuffled banks. And
right.
so we stay in very close touch with lenders so that we know what kind of lenders are doing what kind of loans. And they're a pretty good referral source for us, too, because they know who's doing a good job by who's bringing them loans.
So what's next for you? You got some projects you can tell us about?
I always have projects.
Or do you have to keep it on the down low?
Yeah,
is that part of your
Really, everything that we do is confidential.
Right, because when people see you coming in, don't all the employees go, why is she here? What's going on? Is there something I should know about?
Yeah, we do often do a little subterfuge on that because we can be, you know, an insurance person or a banker or an accountant very easily when we walk in. Or
so
just a general
consultant.
You're
not wearing,
consultant.
Like, business broker hat
no,
or something?
No, we don't,
like,
we don't
we'll
wear...
We'll sell your business.
We don't wear a business broker hat. We don't have, you know, when we leave a message, it's very personal and confidential.
Right. So there's more to this exit strategy, though, than just getting the check. You got to be smart about what you're going to do with that check and how you leave the business. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. It's probably more important what you keep these days than what you get, and many people forget about that. When we start talking to business owners about price, we also start talking about terms and about what they're going to do with any big cash event that they get. And there are ways to defer the tax on a sale that even most people's accountants are not familiar with. So these are the kind of things that we know because it's what we do every day.
Right.
And the way a deal is structured can make a huge difference in what the person pays in taxes.
Now, if somebody is thinking about selling, or you, as you say, they should be thinking about selling probably as soon as they open the business or pretty soon after that, right? Because their life cycle is only 5 to 7 years and you need 5 years
to get ready.
Have them. So yeah. what's that? Like, say Stone and I were looking to exit, and so we're not 7 years in or 5 years in. What's that first conversation? Or am I now writing checks to you just to have conversations, or how's that engagement work?
The first meeting that we have is a free consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes people walk away with a lot of good hints right there.
So we won't be getting a bill for this morning.
Okay. You're not getting incorrect. A bill for this morning.
Okay. And then we'll withhold your bill that we were going to send you.
And then if we really sincerely believe they're 5 to 7 years away, we'll set up sort of a tiered responsibility sheet that says to them, okay, here's what you need to do to get where you want to be. So if they say to me, you know, I really need $2 million. And I say, well, let's take a look at your financials and see where you're at now.
Right.
And I say, well, you know, you're probably closer to $250,000 right now. And if you want to be at $1 million, here's what you're going to have to do.
Right.
And so we discover whether they really want to invest the time and money and energy in getting there, or they just want to continue on the way they are. So it is the business owner's responsibility to take on what needs to happen. We can only coach them along the way.
Now, what if I wanted someone to take that on? Do you know somebody that does that, or that's a different thing?
Take on running your business for
or
you?
Or no, helping us get to that point.
Oh, we'll do that. We just won't do the things that we tell you you need to do.
Right.
In other words, if we tell you you need to get your books and records in order, and you go, no, I'm just never going to do that.
No, I'm good with my shoebox.
Right, I'm good with my shoebox. Okay, so we might say to them, you need to see this person and have your QuickBooks set up and then see them monthly.
Right.
All right. We might say, you need to start replacing yourself.
Right.
You need to in the next
year. So you're actually coaching them up so they can get to that $2
million. Exactly.
If that's really their goal. That's part of what your service is.
Absolutely. And then if they do those things, you'd be amazed at how quickly the business will actually sell for what they want.
Right.
Because the expectations of a buyer are met.
Right, and you know what those expectations are because that's what you do every day.
Exactly. We know what a buyer expects.
Right. So you're just kind of filling in all those blanks so that the buyer gets the answers they're looking for.
Exactly. And if people discover as a buyer, if they discover things they don't like, especially if those don't likes have to do with numbers that don't make sense,
right,
that turns them off very quickly on the business because it's very risky, as you said earlier, to buy a business. So the last thing you want is to buy something that's not what you thought.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you went through this process and you put some energy, you got a little bit of counsel, and you got your business tightened up, even if you eventually decided not to sell, your business is in a lot better shape.
That is exactly right. So what is good for you if you're going to sell it is good for you, period.
Right.
Yes. And sometimes it's not the right time. We often tell people, now's just not the right time. You need to be thinking about your personal financial situation as well. So if you're very young and you don't know maybe where you're going at all, you don't have anywhere to go, you might want to think about holding on to that business a little bit longer.
So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and have a more substantive conversation with you about some of these topics?
Well, you can probably tell I like to talk to anyone. So they can call me on the phone at 770-918-9390. They can find us on our website at www.consultcap.com. And just
and
reach
that's
out.
K-A-P,
Cap. That's K-A-P, right? No C's in there, except for on the front. Consult K-A-P. Sorry about that. And we set up a time that works for everyone. And we sit down and we just chat. No obligation, no pressure. Just want to get to know you and your business.
Outstanding. Well, it's been an absolute delight having you on the show this morning.
Well, thank you.
And then, like you, I saw in your notes, you were a past president of the Business Brokers Association.
Yes.
Are you still involved with that group?
I am still involved, very involved. The Georgia Association of Business Brokers is the state professional association for people who do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely a check mark that people should check off if they're thinking about hiring a business broker or interviewing business brokers. Are you a professional? Are you a member of your state association?
It might be fun to have some folks from that association come in, and or I was thinking maybe come in with a client sometime when you get on the backside of it and it's okay to talk about it. It might be interesting to hear from their perspective.
That would be fun.
You'd be up for that?
I would be up for that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I'd love to.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio with Legal Shield, Worry Less, Live More, Mr. Keith Ivey. Welcome to the show,
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, you've been very polite. I saw you nodding your head a lot. Did you learn anything in that last segment?
I did. I owned a business once, and I had planned to sell it. And I wish I'd had really great expertise to help me do that. When you do not have good advice, you make bad decisions.
And you get scar tissue.
Absolutely.
That'll help you for the next time.
You have the marks to prove that you were not doing your best.
Well, and part of good advice is to get yourself a little air cover on the legal side of things.
Absolutely. It's amazing how most of us do not have access to an attorney. Now, when I owned my own business out in California, I had an attorney, and I paid him $500 a month as a retainer fee, and I burned through that $500 in about 2.5 hours every month. But I ran almost everything by him. And when I came to Atlanta and I no longer had that business, I found that obviously I'm not going to pop out $500 a month retainer fee. And that means that when I've got a problem that's a $200 or $300 problem, I'm not going to seek legal help or legal advice because the return on that investment is not there. Or at least it doesn't look like it's there, although we have a way of having $200 problems turn into $2,000 problems really fast.
That can happen in a hurry.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Now, Lee, you have a bail bondsman on retainer, but not a lawyer.
Right. Is that covered by Legal Shield?
Only barely. Even in bail bonds world, you still need that attorney now and then.
Good tip. Now, what are all these legal problems you're having that they require? You're spending a lot of time with attorneys.
It's a really funny thing when you think about it. We think about, in fact, I talk to a lot of people who say, well, I never talked to an attorney. I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, I can't afford it. So, well, that's the reason you don't talk to an attorney about all sorts of things. I mean, how many times in our lives it would have been really cool to sit down and say to an attorney, okay, here's the situation. What should I do? What are my rights? What are my obligations? What could I do here? I got a bill from XYZ department store, and I don't owe that money. What should I do? Well, having an attorney say, well, here's what you do, is a very good thing. But at $250 an hour, that's not a question we're going to ask.
So how have you solved this problem?
Well, I solved the problem about 3 years ago when I became a member of Legal Shield. And like most people, I did not become a member of Legal Shield until I absolutely had to. One of the things I learned in eighth grade science was objects in motion stay in motion and objects at rest stay at rest until they're acted upon by an unbalanced force. In my case, the unbalanced force was getting rear-ended by a teenage driver who was texting. And all of a sudden, I needed an attorney. Well, I didn't have access to an attorney, so my next-door neighbor was a Legal Shield associate. She signed me up for Legal Shield, and now I had an attorney. Of course, I got a 25% discount on representation. If I had signed up for Legal Shield the week before, representation would have been included in my membership, which is less than $1 a day. And so, the ROI of that investment became very clear to me.
So this is kind of like lawyer insurance?
Yeah, we can think of it as lawyer insurance, except in the insurance world, for instance, health insurance. When you file a claim for health insurance and you go to the doctor and you file a claim, the insurance company books that as a claim loss. In other words, money has come out of their pocket. In Legal Shield world, Legal Shield as a corporation wants you as a member to use your Legal Shield membership every day, if you will, because the more times you use it, the better decisions you're going to make. And the law firm has already been paid. You know, they're not going to make more money or less money whether you use it or not. So they've been paid. So the idea is to take advantage of this resource, which is a real honest-to-goodness top-drawer law firm that has 55. In Georgia, we have 55 attorneys in every specialty.
Well, that was my next question, because when you say a dollar a day, I'm seeing Danny DeVito in that movie with Matt Damon.
Yeah, sitting in the back seat of a really, really cheap Lincoln, Googling questions.
Right. That's not what you get here.
No, that's not what you get here. And in fact, that is it's sort of odd. You know, how can I get a really great attorney for less than a dollar a day? And the answer is, well, the same way you can get a great doctor for, you know, less than $10,000, because basically you know, insurance creates a risk pool, and out of that risk pool, doctors and attorneys get paid, and that's what we're basically doing. We're creating a membership pool, and people have access to a great attorney because everybody's not calling that attorney on the same day.
Right.
And so you mentioned, I guess I would call it, going with Lee's analogy, a pre-existing condition. You still had to pay a little money in your scenario because you weren't a member when the thing happened.
Occurred, right.
Right.
So is there some sort of waiting period, or they're not going to come in and fix my last two divorces? They're just, but going forward, right?
No, but what they will do is tell you what you could have done in your last two divorces to get.
Yeah, Lee and Kevin do that all the time.
But this is honest to goodness, real helpful advice, so that you can avoid the legal problems in the future. No, you can get advice on any pre-existing condition at no additional charge. But if you've got a pre-existing legal matter that needs to be dealt with now, that is a 25% discount. So you're going to need an attorney anyway, so you might as well get a discount on that service.
Now, what are some of the things that are covered by this Legal Shield? Is it like personal or is it business, both?
We have really a couple of ways to go. We have a legal plan for individuals and families. We have a legal plan for employees of businesses. And then we have a legal plan for the business owner that is really directed at protecting his or her business. And so when a person becomes a member of Legal Shield, the very first thing that we do, and this is maybe the most important thing, because the numbers that I see say that 87% of all the adults in Georgia do not have a will. And except they think they don't have a will. The reality is they do have a will. If they die without one, they've written, the state of Georgia has one, and if they were still alive, they would not be happy. So you don't have a will. You become a member of Legal Shield. The very first thing we do is write a will for you and your husband or wife if you're married. And that's included in the membership. And that happens within the first 2 weeks of membership. So now the will is done. The next thing that happens and that's covered is conversations. You can call up the attorney as many times as you want to, as many times during a day as you want to, and talk about any issue that you want to and say, I need advice about this. This is what's going on. What should I do, or what should I have done? And they will give you the legal advice that you need to make.
Like from an actual lawyer or like their assistant?
No, always from an actual lawyer. We do not use paralegals. We don't use assistants.
It's like, you know how doctors have that nurse hotline.
Right. No, this is a real honest-to-goodness attorney.
The nurses are smarter than the doctors. That actually makes sense in that situation.
Yeah, well, in this particular case, you're actually dealing with an attorney who is a specialist in an area. For instance, my last conversation with our attorney law firm was about a videotape copyright issue, and I had a dispute with a former client, and so I needed very specialized copyright advice in what to do about a particular issue. You know, that afternoon, a copyright attorney called me, and we developed a strategy for dealing with this problem and got it solved. And so,
he could take it as far as sending letters, and that's
right.
All included.
In fact, and that's what he did. And on my behalf, he wrote a letter to this client that said, basically, if you keep doing what you're doing, bad things are going to happen. So don't do that anymore.
And then if that person continued, he would take it. He's going to court and
that's
he's
right.
doing all that. And that's my dollar a day is paying that.
Well,
I'm not writing more checks.
No, if you actually go to court, that's going to be a 25% discount. Now, if you get sued, one of the great things that, you know, things we don't realize that when, for instance, when we get in our car to drive over here today, I created a legal liability situation because I'm in my car. If I have an accident and someone is killed, somebody's getting sued, and it's probably going to be me. Who's going to defend me? I've got insurance, but who's going to defend me? In Legal Shield, as soon as I become a member, I get 60 hours in my legal bank, which means I have a law firm that's going to defend me for the first 60 hours within my membership. I don't have to pay any more money until hour 61. So if somebody's suing me, they're coming out of pocket on dollar one, and I'm coming out of pocket on dollar, a lot later.
So do you have a sweet spot, because you mentioned the individual, the employee, the employer. Do you have a sweet spot that you market Legal Shield services
to? Yeah,
my
background is being a small business owner. I've owned small businesses, frankly, since I was 12, which is a long time. And so I have a real affinity for small business owners. I know what they go through. I know what it's like to own the business, to run the business, and to sometimes get frustrated with the business. And I know what it's like not to have the resources that you need because you just frankly don't have the cash flow to support that decision. And so my focus in Legal Shield is with that small business owner who has either one employee, maybe them and their wife or their husband, up to about 99 employees. But my sweet spot is around 10, 15, 20 employees. That's really where I spend most of my time.
Now, business owners, there's not really is it the same $30 a month?
A business owner will pay a little bit more because they have, especially if they have employees, because those employees are creating liability for
right.
them. And so the business plans do cost a little bit more. But for instance, a business plan for a business, most of my business customers or clients or members are paying like $50 a month as opposed to a dollar a day. So it's a radically low price for the kind of benefit and access that the business owner and his or her family get. I mean, think of it as you're getting access to major resources that normally you would have to spend a lot of money, $200, $300 an hour. Instead, you're spending $300, $400 a year
right.
to have that very
right.
same access.
Right, so like
access.
1 hour of talking to an attorney pays for a
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
So are these folks finding you, or do you have some approach where you get on their radar and get a chance to have a conversation like this with them? Or how does your marketing thing work?
I spend a great deal of time in networking events. I go to a lot of chamber of commerce, business associations. I'm really looking for face-to-face interaction with business owners. The last 6 months, though, Legal Shield has been running television commercials first of all in Charlotte and now in Atlanta and on the West Coast. And it's amazing the number of people I talked to 3 months ago who now call me because they know I'm the Legal Shield guy. They saw it on TV. Therefore,
it
must be a cool deal. if it's on television, it's real.
So how about this identity theft thing? Is there as much to that as they would have you believe? Is this something we really ought to have
identity
our
Identity theft is a major, major issue. And the reality is that people who steal identities are better at it today than they ever have been. They are really, this is a profession for them. This is what they do when they get up in the morning. And the sad thing is that very often you don't know your identity's been compromised until you try to do something that's sort of out of the ordinary for you. For instance, I got a phone call last week from a friend of mine out in California, talked to her about Legal Shield about 4 months ago, as soon as we started doing this, and she calls me up last week and says, I need identity theft. I said, really? She said, yeah. I filed my income taxes, discovered that someone has already filed income taxes in my name, has gotten a refund, and IRS would like to have that money back. Well, IRS, you can work with IRS to figure this out, but the problem is she doesn't know in what other ways her identity's been compromised. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to enroll her in identity theft. We're going to do the research to find out what's happened, and then we're going to restore her identity to the place it was before all of this stuff happens. And that's one of the things that we bring to the party that's very unique is restoration.
So, it's not just protecting or handling the legal piece of it, but you actually come back and just make everything right with the credit card companies?
We make everything right. We fix it the way it was before it happened. Now, and something else, too, that we require all of our members who are in identity theft protection to sign a limited power of attorney because they have to give us the authority to act on their behalf.
Now, see, that's good selling. I just had my identity stolen, and now
I'm
going
to give it to you.
but now what we're going to do? What we're going to do though is we're going to go after the person who did it. We're going to prosecute them and seek incarceration.
Uh-huh.
And so in order to do that, we have to have limited power of attorney.
That means
that we're actually doing stuff.
Incarceration means jail, Kevin.
Yeah. We'll send you a note.
He's taking notes for the press release.
You know, something else that we do, and this is really important for moms and dads who have kids who drive cars. You get a speeding ticket in Atlanta, and the first thing you normally do is go figure out how much to pay, and you go ahead and pay it. What we do is a member of Legal Shield sends that ticket to the law firm, and then the law firm sends an attorney to traffic court to represent the member with the objective of keeping that driving, you know, that ticket off of their driving record. They probably have to pay the fine, maybe negotiate the fine down, but the whole point, the whole big deal in traffic, you know, moving violations, is the record on your driving record and how it hurts your insurance the following year. And so, you know, that's included in the membership. And that's the one thing that does not kick in until 15 days after membership, because it takes 15 days for Legal Shield to notify all of the states around the country that you are a member. So that if you get stopped in Alabama and they go back to their police car and they do their little typing, it comes up that you're a member of Legal Shield. And sometimes you don't even get a ticket because the police officer knows you're going to court. And he doesn't want to go to court. And so you get a warning. So, you know, we certainly don't guarantee that, but that has been known to happen quite a bit.
So if we want to hang up our kids' keys for 2 weeks and apply for membership or have a conversation with you about this, what's the best way for them to reach out?
I'd love to hear from people on the phone. My phone number is 714-322-0901. Yes, it's a Southern California number, but I am in Atlanta most of the time. So 714-322-0901, and I'll talk to anybody about Legal Shield anytime they want to talk.
Fantastic. Thanks for making the trip. Thanks for making the trip twice.
My pleasure.
No, this is an important topic, man.
That's
you
right.
Got,
the
you
way you
have
drive.
And I have two kids. I got one driving over in Athens. God knows what kind of traffic she's running into and, you know, the people around her. And I got one that thinks she's getting a car and is probably going to get a license in May. I mean, this is important stuff. I don't know anybody to steal my identity. That would not be real smart.
Wouldn't be a good investment.
No, I don't think so.
But the great thing for parents who have kids in college to know that they're if the kid gets in trouble with any issue, they've got an attorney they can call before they call the parent. They call the attorney, then they call the parent and say, here's what's going on. Everything's cool.
Katie would be all over that idea. Yeah. Hey, you going to hang with us while we
I'll
visit
do it.
With our
Absolutely.
Next guest?
Absolutely. Wouldn't all leave.
Right. So our headliner, Lee, the one we've all been waiting for to wrap this whole thing up this morning on Atlanta Business Radio with AHT Interiors, President and Director of Design, Miss Allison Havel Todd. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Honor to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about this world of interior design. What are you out there doing for folks?
We specialize in residential. We also do some office and business work, and of late have really become or created a niche in lakefront and waterfront homes in particular.
Now, with this economy and the housing situation, I bet your business has been booming.
It has been booming.
We've been in business for 15 years. I would think, are staying there longer, so they want to make their house as nice as they can.
Oh, I thought you were being sarcastic.
No, sure. Really.
So did I.
Sorry. No, I thought for sure people are living in their house longer, so now instead of trying to sell it and go through that, they're saying, look, I'm going to just take some money and make this as good as it can be.
You're correct. Some years ago, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, people, if they wanted one little change in their house, they were so quick to sell it and move to the McMansion
house,
in the suburbs.
Right, that
and,
has it already. Right?
And spend a whole lot more money than they needed to. And what we're seeing now is people that have been in their homes for 25, even 30 years, and are finally saying, hey, we think we're going to be here for a little while. Maybe we're not going to be moving. And they're looking to create the home that they've always wanted to have. I've been waiting and waiting unnecessarily and am now coming around and saying, gee, let's do something and enjoy where we live for a change.
You must have fantastic social skills, though, because this is such a personal space. Don't you find people a little anxious about you coming in and pointing here and doing all that?
People are very anxious before they call us, and I am very aware of the stereotypes within my industry, and we try very hard to overcome those and and make people know that we really are approachable, friendly. We like to make the entire experience fun. It's not just about the result, but it's about the experience along the way. This should be a fun experience. We want to take the burden off of the homeowner and the client, have some fun doing it, get them the results that they're looking for, and save them a pile of money in the long run.
Now, when you're working with a client, is your job kind of going in and together kind of forming what the inside's going to look like? Or does it stretch into like, well, we want to add a room here and fix the bathroom, so you're helping in the construction or on that side? Or is it just kind of the more superficially stuff that around the walls that already exist?
We're going to focus mostly on the existing living environments or business office. If it's going to get into construction, remodeling, renovation, knocking down walls, things like that, I need to get a contractor involved.
But are you the quarterback of this whole process, or is that something you hand off to somebody else?
If it is a fully remodeling project, we can specify finishes and materials, but I'm going to hand that off to somebody else. I do not want to be the general contractor.
Right.
Now, have you always done this? How did you know you wanted to get in this line of work?
Well, I've been in business a whole lot longer than I understand I'm supposed to be, 15 years, and no intent to leave.
Got a prospect for you, Catherine.
No intent to leave anytime soon. In hindsight, I would say, yes, somewhere in the back of my mind, I always knew this was my forte. It just took me a little while to figure it out.
Now, what's the pain a person's having that they think, you know what, I think it's time to call an interior design professional, as opposed to, you know, buying a magazine and looking at that and saying, I think I can pull this off, or going into Home Depot and going, how hard can this be?
Sometimes, and unfortunately, they're calling us after they've made the expensive mistake.
So you fix Home Depot mistakes? Is that
I'd rather not.
That's your slogan.
It's a whole lot easier if somebody will call us at the beginning of a venture before they've started to make very expensive mistakes, because we can really create a plan from the very beginning, talk to them about their lifestyle, their preferences, their budget, most importantly up front. That's a scary thing that nobody seems to want to talk about,
right.
But that's a conversation we have from the very beginning. Preferences and timeline, and who's responsible for what? Who's going to be doing what? What are the expectations? What do you want to accomplish? And have all those conversations up front.
And you do corporate work as well?
We do. We do some small businesses or offices. I don't get into the large commercial projects because, quite frankly, there's not a whole lot of gratification in that. We work for hugs.
Now, you mentioned that you also can help people save money. How does the money saving happen?
I think people don't realize when they have done things on their own in the past, and perhaps they've not worked with an interior design professional, they probably haven't accounted for how much money they really spent on a project over an extended period of time often. What we will typically come in and do is, if there's a room or rooms in the home that the homeowner is wanting to update, or maybe we're starting anew, is we come up with a plan and a budget at that time. And while it may sound like it's a lot more money than they've ever spent before, I guarantee it's probably a whole lot less than they spent before, because they're not buying things that don't work, that they have to get rid of or give to their cousin or their neighbor or their uncle, or sell on eBay and start all over again. If we do things and they hire us from the beginning, we're going to do it right, and they're going to end up with the result that they want, and it's going to be within the agreed upon budget.
Now, you mentioned lakefront property. What are those engagements like? Are these people, these are their second home, or this is their retirement home?
Sometimes permanent residence.
Permanent residence.
Combination of all of those. And we've done lakefront homes on Lake Lanier and Kiwi and Hartwell. I happen to live up by Lake Lanier, and our design studio is located very close to Lake Lanier, so we're conveniently located there. And I think because it is such a strong passion of mine, and I love the environment, and the lakefront homes are so varied and unusual, and everyone's different, and the homeowners tend to be more relaxed, we're not creating these museum-like show houses.
That no one wants to touch anything or sit on
it. That's a beautiful room, but don't go in there.
You can't go.
We want to design rooms and spaces that people love to live in and be in, have friends in, have fun in. So I would say, you know, the lakefront homes and waterfront homes in particular are appealing to me and passionate, mostly because I love the environment, but because we really are able to do what is our strong point, is create very classic, comfortable, inviting,
but livable,
very livable environments.
Now, is the new home buyer or the investor that buys homes and flips them, is that a market for either you or people in your arena?
Not as much anymore. Probably 5 or plus years ago, there were a lot of people making a pile of money buying and flipping homes. I don't think you're seeing a terrible amount of that activity going on. these days. I don't do a ton of staging of homes. We're really looking to work with the person or people that are going to be living there. It's fun. This is why we do what we do. I'm not going to retire with $1 million doing what I do, but it is probably the most gratifying work that I could possibly choose.
So how do you find the ugly interiors or the less than what they could be interiors?
Do you have like a special blog where you take pictures of the real ugly ones like anonymously?
Oh, no. We post all of our before pictures publicly. It's actually fun when we go into a project and always bring the digital camera and we always like to take before pictures to document the process because you forget when it's all done and you've got this fabulous environment where we started from. And we will often put together a portfolio or album for the client and we'll share them on our website and our Facebook page. And it's so funny, in the first time when I'm at a client's home and they'll say, no, don't take any pictures. I said, this is before. It's the after that we care about.
Do you have any stories you can share about maybe a way you transformed a home in an unusual way or a way that the owner of the home was really pleased with?
Well, I can tell you about a most recent experience. It was a lot of fun and we hadn't planned for, but it worked out perfectly. We had some clients who were planning a trip to Ireland, and while they were gone, the only things that were supposed to be happening in their house was having the painters there, the wallpaper hanger, and the electrician. So they fully expected to come back to a house that was still covered in tarps with everything pulled off the bookshelves and the furniture pushed in the middle of the room. And it just so worked out that everything else that was part of that plan, all the furnishings, the rugs, the window treatments, the whole nine yards, it turned out that it was all coming together right before they were getting home. So we scrambled, worked with their office assistant to have access into the home while they were gone. Mm-hmm. And when they came home, their living room and dining room were absolutely beautifully done.
So it was completed?
Complete.
Wow.
Completely completed
what
and totally
surprise.
Unexpected.
They must
yes.
have fallen yeah. over.
This is the client whose husband really was a little grudgingly going along for the ride, but he's the very one that said, okay, when are we going to do the kitchen?
Is that what happens typically when you start in one room and eventually they like it so much you're getting the whole house?
Yes, I warn people from the very get-go, if we're starting in one room and we're not going to do these other areas, because most of the homes are a relatively open floor plan, I caution them on the danger, starting with the one, because I promise you, you're going to want to move on after this. And interestingly enough, the one who maybe hasn't been the initiator of the process or was sort of going along with it is oftentimes the one that once they can see the results and they understand how we work and that we're not there to take over and this is real world and it's fun and we're doing what we say we're going to do when we say we're going to do it for how much we say it's going to cost, they say, oh, this is kind of cool. We like this. But let's do the next room. So that's quite often part of the process.
Well, you touched on budget briefly a little while ago, and I'm sure one could spend Lee Cantor kind of money on their mansion if
exactly.
they wanted to, but I get the idea that you can really make a real impact with a fairly modest budget, at least to get started. Yeah?
Yes. I would certainly say, Keith, sorry, more than a dollar a day. My fee is more than a dollar a day. I do like to tell people that you don't have to live in a mansion or a multi-million dollar house to have a wonderful environment, and I feel pretty strongly about liking where you live. We have handled projects for as little as $5,000. I think that's what you need to feel like you're making any kind of impact, and some for over $100,000. And some things happen over a period of time. It might be that we work with a client over a period of years in some cases or through several houses.
Right.
So how does it all start? At first you come out and have some sort of consultation with them, and even if you really, really don't like what you see, you have to find a nice way to say, you know, we might could do something with that.
We might not like what we see, but we know we can turn it into something we like. We will always schedule an initial consultation to meet with the clients in their home, preferably. Sometimes people will meet us at the design studio, but I really like to get into the space and just have some conversation about what they're looking to accomplish. What do you like? What are your preferences? If it's a new home, I have no idea what they're coming from. Somebody may say, well, I don't like modern, or I don't like traditional. My question is going to be, what do you mean by that? I don't know what that means to you. So the first consultation is really a whole lot more about listening than talking.
And then are you showing them stuff? Are you going online? Are you showing them other houses or others? If they say modern, then you're saying, okay, how are you defining modern? And you show them like example this modern or this modern?
I use my website as a good starting point. We keep a portfolio of photography up there and change that very frequently, and that will show a variety of different homes and styles that we have done for different clients. But I caution people that that was for that person. That's not for you. I may suggest that they flip through some home magazines, internet sites, just to give me an idea of what's appealing to them. We don't want to duplicate or copy anything. Everything should be tailored to each individual. It's not cookie cutter. Every project is different, and every person is different.
That's what they told me at Sport Clips, because I wanted to look like Mel Gibson, and that was the exact line they used. We didn't want to duplicate.
Can't duplicate. It's tricky. Sometimes often we'll have clients that live in the same neighborhood, and I have to be very, very careful that everybody's different, even though some of the homes are relatively similar in some of the subdivisions. Each person living there has a very different taste from their neighbor, and it's really about understanding that individual's taste, their lifestyle. Do they have pets and children or grandchildren, or are they empty nesters? So the very different things are going to work for people at different stages in their life.
Now, can you do some like crazy stuff like Stone loves NASCAR? Like, can you make it like a NASCAR theme and like, you know, use like the front of a car as...
I love something. Crazy stuff, but only if it's Formula One. Can't do NASCAR.
Sorry. But can you do things like that if somebody has some eccentric taste that they want implemented? Like,
sure.
You can, you've done things like that?
Sure.
In the
most
past?
Of the time, that'll happen in a finished terrace level or downstairs of a home. Mm-hmm. So maybe the main level is the typical, traditional, everything flows, it all goes. But sometimes I'll suggest that when we go downstairs, let's get out of the box. Let's do something different. What do you like? What are your passions? You like NASCAR? Oh, Formula One? Or you like fishing or boating? Or let's do something a little bit different. We want to be careful about it being too themey. I think that can become very dated very quickly, but it might be introducing some elements of that into it. But I think it's really fun to do something different in the spaces where you can.
But that personalizes it and makes, you know, if that's their passion, that makes sense in their home, especially if they're going to stay there for any length of time.
We design real homes for real people. I like to say we're not in the model home business. We have done model homes and we've participated in show houses. While that is nice, it's not very gratifying. There's nobody living there. It's right. Not real world. This is not HGTV, folks. This is real life.
Right. So now if somebody wanted to learn more, you mentioned your website has a lot of stuff on it.
Yeah, website's a good spot. And again, that's a sampling of work for other clients. Our website is www.ahtinteriors.com. Facebook page, we also post a lot of before and after pictures of projects as they're completed on there.
And then that's the same AHT Interiors?
That would be Allison Havel Todd Interiors,
okay,
full name.
On Facebook.
On Facebook.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for being a guest today, and thanks to all of our guests. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.